Welcome to In My Own Words, where we stand behind our opinion, like Larry King stands for the legend that he is, completing over 50,000 interviews. Here's one of my favorites.
Lasted how long?
9 years, 180 episodes.
You gave it up, right?
I did, sir.
They didn't cancel you. You canceled them.
You're not aware of this?
No, I'm asking you.
You think I got canceled? Are you under the impression that I got canceled?
You? Have I hurt you, Jerry?
I thought that was pretty well documented.
Don't most shows go down a little?
Most people do also. Yeah, no, I went off the air. I was the number one show on television, Larry.
You were.
Do you know who I am?
Jewish guy, Brooklyn.
Yes.
Okay.
75 million viewers last episode.
What are you? Don't take it so bad.
Well, that's a big difference between being canceled
and being number one.
Okay, I'm sorry. We'll be right back.
Jeez.
Gotta love Seinfeld. Rest in peace. The legend, Larry King. Welcome to episode. Turn this down. I can't even hear myself. Welcome to episode 62 of In My Own Words, the number one podcast in my world. I don't know. Super happy to have you guys here. Thinking about the number one podcast and thinking about this whole David and Goliath fight that is GameStop, that is AMC, that is Dogecoin and Bitcoin. Thinking about this whole fight between Wall Street Bets and free trade, retail traders, and Wall Street has got me thinking about David and Goliath all over the place. And when it comes to the podcasting world, I don't even think I qualify as a David. You know what I mean? Like, David was the runtiest and the scrawniest of the kids. You know, he was the least likely to succeed and this big feat. But he was in the fight, right? And then no one could take away from him that he was going to be in the fight. And so when he got into the fight, he had a chance to win simply because he was in the fight. Now, he did win because God was on his side. But he had a chance to win because he was in the fight. I don't even know if I'm in the fight in a podcast game. I love what I do. If you're watching this or listening to this, I assume you love what I do. And I appreciate that. And I don't want to underestimate that. But I don't know if I'm in the fight. There's something that happened, and we're going to talk about GameStop and stock market and short selling and Dave Portnoy and all the, you know, we're going to talk about it all. We got time today. We're going to talk about it all. But I want to talk about this. I had on my list of things here, my trusty, dusty list of topics to discuss. I kind of have things segmented out. We're trying to get more organized with the show. I love saying we because it's really just me. That's all it is. There's no one else in here. I'm in my garage at my house. When I tell people this is my garage, they say, you have a nice looking garage. Well, thank you. It doubles as a studio and a parking space and apparently a storage unit for my father's things. It's a different story for a different day. Anyway, so I'm doing this podcast and I love it. I think it's going to be a lot more than what it is today, but I'm very grateful and thankful for the people who watch it. But that comes with a certain level of power, right? You have none. And when I say power, I don't necessarily mean influence. I mean the power to defend yourself and defend your work. So here's what I'm talking about. I'm writing my list down. I'm scrolling through social media like I normally do. And I'm thinking about all the things in the last 7 or 8 days, however long it's been since we spoke. Thinking about all the things that has impacted me in a certain way. And so I make a list of those things. And then the majority of them get scratched off the list or just I never bring them up because, I don't know, I get into things. But you can see this list today is pretty long. I guarantee you we're not going to cover half the things on this list. But one of the things on this list, and I'll read it just as I wrote it, Kevin Hart steals Andrew Schultz's idea. That was what I wrote down on the list. Now, Andrew Schultz is one of my favorite independent comedians. That sounds a funny phrase. I'm going to explain it to you. There's a group of comedians who are big to me, but not globally recognized, that I just love and adore. I love the way that they're building their careers. I love how they handle their business. I love the other things that they have in their pockets that they do to support their comedy careers. They're all content creators. And Andrew Schultz is one of them and has been for years. I was so thrilled to go watch him live when he came here to Indianapolis a couple years ago. Got a chance to take a picture with him, a picture that I post periodically on my Instagram. Every time Andrew does something big, because I'm a part of his audience, I feel like I'm a part of that win too, even though I had nothing to do with it. And so I post a picture. I posted a picture, that picture of me and Andrew when he announced his Netflix special, right? And there were a bunch of people saying, congratulations, and oh my gosh, I didn't know you worked with Andrew. And I was like, guys, I don't. I had to come clean. Like, I don't work with Andrew. I only met him once. I wish I could work with Andrew. I know nothing about this guy. But I adore what he does, the way that he does it. I'm a big, big fan. Kev on Stage is in that category, which I think we've talked about him before. And there's a bunch of other people. But Andrew Schultz has a show that he started a couple years ago. I want to say it was 2018, maybe even 2019, maybe 17. I don't know. It's been a while, though. And I believe he had Roy Wood Jr. on the show. He had Gary Owen on the show. A lot of comedians that I like. I think Neil Brennan was on the show. There's a show called Inside Jokes. And he was giving you an inside look at the mind of the comedians as they work through some jokes that maybe didn't work before. Some jokes that bombed and they couldn't figure out why they bombed. And if you don't know, one of the things I love about comedy is it's a puzzle piece that you're constantly trying to put it together. I have bits in my head now that I think would work, but I don't know until I hit the stage. And after I hit the stage, that's when the real work begins. I have bits that I did on stage before and just completely bombed or elicit the wrong type of response. And now I have to go figure that out. I had this bit once, and this is what I kept telling myself. If I ever get on Andrew's show and we talk about inside jokes, I want to talk to him about a bit that I had that I haven't done it in about a year or two. But the premise was essentially this. And the line goes something like this. The only difference between the Supremes and Destiny's Child, which today would probably be the difference between the Supremes and City Girls, is domestic violence. And that sounds crazy, right? And the point that I'm making is, as domestic violence decreases and women's rights increase, women are starting to be able to freely create content and freely give their ideas on whatever they want to talk about. And so some of the things, if you listen to JT's verse on the Throat Baby remix and some of the stuff she's talking about, Diana Ross could never. Diana Ross could never. And all I was saying in the bit was, you know, you're not going to be singing, can you pay my bills? Can you pay my automobiles? If your man is waiting on you outside of the booth when you come out ready for a backhand. That's all I'm saying, right? Like, you're not going to be able to sing that song with the amount of truth and the confidence that Beyonce, Michelle, and Kelly were able to sing it with. Your song is going to sound a little different. It's going to be more of, no, you can't hurry, love. No, you just got to wait, right? So I did this joke, and there's a full bit to it. I won't do the whole thing, but there's a full bit to it. I did this joke, and, you know, most of the people in the audience were laughing. But there was one lady that got really upset with me, like was ready to fight me about it, and it triggered her in a certain way. And I was early in the game. I didn't know how to deliver my material in a certain way. But there was a line in there, and I said, if you think about it, there's a great chance your grandfather probably hit your grandmother. That's why he wear that t-shirt. It's called a wife beater, right? And so, I know, touchy stuff. If I did that joke today, I would deliver it differently. But that's, you know, I would go on that show, Inside Jokes with Andrew, and work out some of the edgy, raw material like that. It's like, there's something good here. There's something funny. There's even some teachable stuff, teachable moments there. but it's such a like I gotta, you know, it's what I call a comedic heist. I think the best comedians are able to pull off heists. That means that they talk about things that you shouldn't be able to talk about, or you're not supposed to talk about, but they talk about them in a way that creates tension, makes you uncomfortable, but the payoff to that tension and that discomfort is the laugh. And so they go in, they get something they weren't supposed to, they do something they weren't supposed to do, get something they weren't supposed to have, and they walk away with it, and it's beautiful. I call it a heist, the comedic heist. So Andrew has this show. So now, a few days ago, Kevin Hart decides he's going to launch his show. And his show, coincidentally maybe, is called Inside Jokes, where he's going into the minds of comedians. Now, wait a minute. My first thought was,
oh my God.
Wow. Like, how is Kevin going to be able to do this? By the way, this is a new soundboard. That was extremely loud. I'm going to turn that down in post. But my first thing was, like, how is Kevin going to be able to do this? Like, this is Andrew Schultz's idea. Here's another thing. The treatment, the graphics, which I like Andrew's graphics better, were almost the same color. So it's like, oh, here we go again. It's the David and Goliath thing, except in the real world, outside of Bible times, normally David gets crushed. 99 point, even in the Bible days, honestly, 99.9% of the time, that David character gets crushed. And I'm thinking, you know, that's Andrew Schultz, but that's Kevin Hart. There's nothing Andrew's going to be able to do. He's going to take this idea and run with it, and there's nothing Andrew's going to be able to do. And so I wrote that down to come in here and kill Kevin Hart. And man, I got to tell you, I can't kill him. Before I could record, which in all transparency, I'm a day late. Thank God I was, because Kevin Hart not only issued an apology to Andrew Schultz, acknowledging that, hey, I didn't know, I wasn't aware, but this is your show. You had the name first. You should have the name. And so what I'm going to do is get with my people at Laugh Out Loud. I'm going to get with my people over at Sirius Radio, and I'm going to get the name change. Matter of fact, to do Kev justice, I want to read the exact tweet. Let me pull it up, because I thought it was great. He even made a video for it. Why is Kanye Crazy trending? Oh, I think that's a Lil Durk song. Let's see. The first episode by this was an episode with Jerry Seinfeld, who is one of my favorite comedians of all time. He's on that list of people where I just think they're disgustingly funny. He says things where I'd say no matter how much time I have, I couldn't come up with that. Right? There's different levels of being good in comedy. There's a good level of comedy where you hear someone tell a joke and you say, man, I wish I would have wrote that. Right? I wish I could have thought of that. And then there's another level of comedy where you say, I never could have wrote that. Seinfeld's in that first category. So Kevin tweets Andrew. After Andrew tweets Kevin and says, a simple Google search would show an existing Inside Jokes show with millions of views already. They knew the same show name. Excuse me. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Can't get my lips to work together. I got big lips. They knew the same show with the same name existed already and didn't care. I guess Kev got tired of ice baths. So Kev retweeted and responded by saying, I know in your world this makes sense, but in all honesty, it wasn't the case. My team made me aware of this, and our title is now being changed. I apologize on me and my team's behalf. Wish you nothing but the best and more success, champ. All changes are being made ASAP. Andrew then replies and says, wow, thank you, man. I really appreciate that. Kev says, no problem, man. It was a mistake. As a comic, I respect the hustle of others. I would never intentionally do a thing like this. My team and Sirius are working on making the necessary changes. Give a second to get it done. I assure you it will be handled. Once again, I apologize. Round of applause for Kevin Hart. What a stand-up guy. And I got excited about that, right? And I got excited, and my excitement made me do something crazy. My excitement made me go buy stock in AMC. That's what I did off this story. That's how my mind works. I'm like, oh, Because I like to see the pattern of things. Matter of fact, if you listen to this podcast for a while, you may remember this. I'm so happy to have a soundboard again. Can you tell? I've hit it like 17 times in the first 2 minutes of this podcast. But I like to see the signs. I like to watch the pattern of things and the waves and the momentum of culture. I heard the best explanation of culture the other day, and I think it was from Jerry Seinfeld on this podcast. Maybe. I give all credit to all the brilliant things I've ever heard to comedians. So I could be completely wrong. If you listen to it, let me know. But he said that culture is a liquid, not a solid. And I 1,000% agree with that. Meaning that it's fluid, meaning that it's going to flow this way and that way. But I believe that there's always signs, there's always patterns that show the culture is changing. And for a long time, if you were in Wall Street, if you're in the entertainment business, if you're in Hollywood, if you're in even the executive level of a company, you were Goliath and you were undefeated. There was no way you're going to lose that fight. But when I see something like this, Andrew Schultz winning against Kevin Hart in multiple ways than one. One, he's getting Kevin to change the name of his show, right? So Andrew gets to, retain the right to that. But also, people are going to start noticing Andrew Schultz. There are some people who are getting in contact with Andrew Schultz and talking to him that have never done that before. Andrew reposted a video that Kevin had where he explained the whole thing and shouted out Andrew Schultz. And in the comments, which I'm in Andrew's comments all the time, I see The Rock in the comments. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, take it up for Andrew, saying, Hey, by the way, I called Kevin. Da, 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 da. You know what I mean? So he's winning in multiple ways through this transaction. So I'm thinking, you know what? That's very similar to what's happening on Wall Street right now. For those of you who don't know, a subreddit called Wall Street Bets was looking up different stocks that were going to be short sold. Now, if you want me to explain short selling, I can't. I can't explain it. I'm using all these words and phrases that I can't explain to you. All I know is people are borrowing things that they don't have and selling them for prices that doesn't make sense. And essentially, they're betting on the stock prices of that particular stock to go down. So they borrow it at a certain amount with a fee. They sell it. When it drops down to little to no value, they buy it back and they give it back to you that they borrowed it from, right? That's the dumbest explanation you'll hear of it, but that's the way that I understand it. As a matter of fact, my cousin explained it to me pretty well. He says, if I know that your cell phone is going to drop in value within the next couple of months, but you don't know that, I may say, hey, let me borrow your cell phone and it's worth $50. And I go and sell it for $50. And then in 3 months, it drops in value to $2. And I buy it back and I give it back to you. Like, hey, got your phone back. And you're like, oh, cool. Thanks for giving it back, right? So in your mind, you still got your phone. Everything is good. But in my mind, I just made $48 because I knew what was going to happen, right? I was betting on that stock dropping in value. That's my understanding of it. What Wall Street Bets decided to do as a community was to say, hey, I know that they're going to short sell this stock. As a matter of fact, they're already doing it. It's already happening. As a community, let's go and buy that stock so that the price will go up instead of down, putting that hedge fund who's borrowing the stock at a loss. Now, if I'm losing you, congratulations, we're on the same page. I'm lost as well. Well, that's the basic understanding of it, right? And so they go in and they buy GameStop. That's the one that you've been hearing all along. And so with the cell phone analogy continued, instead of it dropping down to $2 from $50, it went up to $300 from $50. Now when I go buy it back, I'm losing money on the bet that I made. From what I understand, that's totally legal. But here's my thing. I'm thinking, wow, this is working. The price of GameStop is way too high, even though I love games. I play games every day. I watch gamers every day. But there's some other ones that may be on the rise that I can get in on. I bought Dogecoin last year. I'm already into Bitcoin. I'm already into a couple of other things, right? And I'm not giving advice because I have no idea what the heck I'm doing. I just take the money that I would have spent at Wendy's and I put it in Dogecoin. I literally took some money and threw it in Dogecoin. Now I have 50, you know, 4,500 Dogecoin, whatever that's worth. You do the math. So I'm looking at this and I'm saying this is the time, but not GameStop, Nokia. No, let me do something that that's in this realm that I kind of believe in. Movie theaters. I like to go to movies. I spend money there all the time. Me and my wife right now are talking about renting out a theater for our kids to be able to go and see a movie, maybe with some of their cousins or something, or maybe a few friends, or maybe just us. There's six of us. That's enough. You can go and rent out a theater, right? So we're talking about doing that. And I think eventually movie theaters will come back, you know, the vaccine and blah, 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 blah. So I went and I said, yo, give me all this AMC stock. And then something happened, something that I didn't see coming, I didn't think was legal, I didn't know anything about. They stopped the ability to buy this stock. Now, you may be thinking, well, why does that matter? And how is this connected to Andrew Schultz and Kevin Hart? Well, here's the thing. Andrew was able to still win in that situation because he has a known and proven commodity. He has a little badge of honor that says, I'm officially legit a comedian. I have a special on Netflix. I have video series with millions of views. I have a podcast that I do every week with Kevin Hart's business partner, Charlamagne Tha God. He has all of these stripes that proves that he's a proven commodity in this business. What the financial people are saying, Wall Street Bets and all of you little guys, you retail traders, you don't have enough stripes. And I didn't know that. And so here I am thinking I'm the Andrew Schultz of the stock market when it turns out I'm not. I'm just like every other little David. And so they proceed to stop letting people buy. So what does that do? This is all the things that I'm learning. I'm sharing it with you guys because we're family, right? What that does is this. If I cannot buy more stock, then the value of that stock is inevitably going to start going down because my only option is to sell the stock. So when I'm going on my Robinhood app, I'm looking to see what the stock price is, and I notice it's very stagnant. I notice a little bit later that it's starting to drop. And I'm starting to think, okay, wow, why is the stock going down? And I see a little notice that says, hey, by the way, you can only sell this stock. You can't buy anymore. And I'm thinking, well, why would they do that? I don't understand. You know, I'm too stupid to get what's actually going on. And then I started to look up, you know, people who are smarter than me or who are more in this game than I am, right? And I see Mark Cuban talking about it. And I see David Portnoy, who's the president of Barstool. And I see all these people, you know, and I started to put it together. I said, oh, okay, I know what you guys are doing now. And I remember hitting the group chat saying, boom, it just hit me. It took me all day. I've been thinking about this all day, but it just hit me. I know what's happening on the stock market. All these hedge funds, all these big suits, all these billionaires are losing money, big money, billions of dollars on these short bets that they made. And the only way at this point to recover it is to stop me, the little Davids. Hey, little Davids. Hello down there, guys. The only way to recover from the money that we took from them is for them to stop our ability to keep buying up the price and only allow us to sell. And of course, the more a stock is sold, the price is going to start going down and down and down and down. And so what they're basically doing is recovering their losses by scaring people into selling their stock. So they make it impossible for you to buy. So if you're holding a position and let's say you bought AMC at $12 and it's at 15, right? And you're holding that position. Well, you want it to go up. You want it to go to 300. You want it to go to 1,000. You want it to go, the phrase that we've been hearing a lot lately, to the moon, because the more it goes up, the more money you make. But it can only go up if people continue to buy it up. And so when they break the limit on how you can buy it up, then guess what happens? No one can buy it. Everyone's afraid. So they start getting out. They start selling. And you've seen AMC plummet. You've seen GameStop drop. You've seen Nokia, BlackBerry, Bed Bath & Beyond. All these stocks that this Wall Street Bet subreddit was pumping up, they stopped because no one can buy it anymore. Now, is that legal? I don't know. I'm not the guy. I'm just telling you how I thought I was about to win, and I'm taking an L right now. As a matter of fact, I don't know what I'm taking right now because I haven't checked it in a while. And my advice, of course, always, I look at short-term investing like that as, money that you should use like you're betting, because essentially you are betting. Robinhood makes it as easy to bet as a DraftKings or FanDuel. So I'm not, it's separate from my retirement savings and all that stuff. I'm only spending money that I would have wasted otherwise, right? In our budget every month, we have disposable income that we could do whatever we want on. Sometimes I buy equipment like this to do things like this, right? I invest into equipment. Sometimes it's to buy silly things like this phone or, other things that I have. And sometimes it's for a burger or a cup of coffee. But, since last year, I decided to stop doing that and put some of that money into some stock. So I said all that to say, the thing with Andrew and Kevin wasn't a turning of the tide for me to say, yes, the culture is changing. No, Wall Street is still keeping their foot on the necks of the little guys. And I think it's going to change eventually. So I'm still holding all of my positions in the stocks that I have. But it's just an interesting thing to observe, what happens when the roles are reversed and now the game is on you? What happens when David looks a lot bigger and a lot stronger than you thought he was, right? What happens when David takes that slingshot and hits you right between the eyes with that rock and you falling flat on your back? What are you going to do now? What does that look like? And even so, here's an interesting thing too, and I'll wrap this up and I'll move on to other things. Here's an interesting thing. What if David, what if David doesn't kill Goliath, but he knocks him down, right? What if he doesn't go cut his head off? What does that do for all the other Davids and all the other Goliaths? You have to pay attention to it now, right? Even if he doesn't kill him, in this case, he did, so everybody's on high alert. They sing the praises of David, right? Even made other warriors in the area upset. But what if he doesn't kill him? But he puts a dent into him like Wall Street Bets did. You better believe they're taking notice. And I wouldn't be surprised if the rules of the game start to change because Goliath got a big old gash in his head the last couple of weeks. And I'm happy to be a part of that. I hope you didn't invest your rent money. I heard people like throwing their rent and their mortgage and their life savings at this stuff. If you know enough to do that and you're comfortable with that risk, go for it. I'm not doing it. I want to move on from that. I just thought it was interesting. Kevin Hart steals Andrew Schultz's idea, but he gives it back nicely. And the connection there between GameStop and the stock market. All right, moving on. I want to talk to you guys about a movie that I watched recently. It is called One Night in Miami. And so with that, we're going to do our two-word movie review for One Night in Miami. Now, for those of you who don't know, this movie fictionalized a real meeting between some of the most amazing people in American culture, American history, and Black culture and Black history. That was Malcolm X, Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali, and Sam Cooke. Now, if you don't know who any of those people are, I don't tell you. Only thing I can tell you is get out. You don't belong here. But fictional meeting in Miami, I believe it takes place in February of 1964. It's the night Muhammad Ali beats Sonny Liston and becomes the champion of the world. Malcolm X is there, who's a friend of Ali's. Sam Cooke is there. And Jim Brown is there as well. Now, that's kind of the setup. It's about this meeting. They meet in this hotel room afterwards, thinking they're going to party, but then end up discussing pretty much their world philosophies and how they see the world and the conflicts that they have, not only within themselves, but within each other, with each other, right? And so I'm going to do a two-word review. If I could do a two-word review on this movie, my two words would be nigga lessons. Yep, you heard that correctly. Nigga lessons. Let me explain. Dave Chappelle hosted Saturday Night Live a couple months ago, right? 2 months ago, I think. And he talked about coming to get these nigga lessons.
You guys aren't ready. You're not ready for this. You don't know how to survive yourselves. Black people, we're the only ones that know how to survive this. Whites, come, hurry quick. Come get your nigga lessons.
You guys remember that? You should watch this monologue if you don't. So I love that phrase. I'm borrowing it here for this review. And this is what I mean by that. This movie is a walking, living, breathing example of how black people should work together to resolve issues. Here you have four of the biggest black names in America, in American culture, American history, right? Especially at that time. Again, Jim Brown had just broken the rushing record playing football. Malcolm X is going through his battles with the Nation of Islam, but he's rose to prominence in a way. Sam Cooke is one of the most amazing voices we've ever seen, but also a shrewd businessman owning his own record label, receiving royalties for songs he's written. You know, so he's doing a lot of things music-wise, entertainment-wise, but also in the entertainment business. And then you have Cassius Clay at the time, who is a champion of the world, but also contemplating his move to the Nation of Islam and becoming Cassius X and eventually Muhammad Ali. Here's the interesting thing about it, though. They all had different perspectives on life, and they all approached life differently, but they all had commonality of being black, and they all had different ways they thought they could improve the situation. But here's the setup of the movie, and here's what I love, and you know, here's what I love about the film, the process of itself, but also some of the messages that I took from it. One of the things I love about the process is this. It's kind of like how I talked about earlier, when you go into this comedic heist, right? When you're going into this thing where there's no possible way this could work. There's no way you could talk about this topic and make it funny. And then you go in there and you pull out funny out of it. That's amazing to me. That's kind of what this movie is for me. There's no way a movie is going to work to the degree that this one has when you are doing another Malcolm X character, another Muhammad Ali. People have done those characters so many times. In fact, if I'm an actor and you come to me, which nobody would ever come to me and say this, but if they came to me and said, hey, I want you to play a young Malcolm X or a young Muhammad Ali, the answer would be no. There's no shot I'm going to follow Martin, you know, I'm not going to follow Malcolm X being played by Denzel Washington. There's no way I'm going to follow Muhammad Ali being played by Will Smith. There's no shot. Who's going to do it better than that? Now, again, no one's asking me that. They're going to come to me and say, we want you to play the young Hannibal Buress or the skinny version of Faison Love. That's what they're going to say to me. They're going to come and say, we want you to play Mike Coulter Jr. in, you know, something like that, right? They're going to want you to play Malik Yoba. We're going to do a documentary of 90s TV shows, and we want you to play these reenactments of Malik Yoba and New York Undercover. Like, that's the role I'm going to get one day. we want you to play a young Tyrese in the Coca-Cola commercial. Okay, sign me up. Nobody, you know, those type of roles. But what I'm saying is, it's so hard to be able to do that and keep it fresh, especially when you're not quoting Muhammad Ali. You're essentially writing dialogue for him. I think that makes it particularly difficult. But in this movie, salute to casting, salute to Regina King and the actors that played these roles. They did a good job of finding people who not only captured the essence of them, but made it feel real and authentic. So that's one thing that I love about the film. Also, Here's another thing that I love about the film, and I've talked about this before. I even had a joke in my comedy routine that talked about having these secret black meetings, right? This is a behind-the-scenes look at a secret black meeting where there are black people who have discourse about the movement and the struggle and how different people are dealing with it, but are doing it behind closed doors and in a way that it only stays between the four of us. I love that. So when Malcolm attacks Sam Cooke, because Sam Cooke is singing and dancing and shuffling for white folks, and then Sam Cooke turns around and says, listen, I don't care, you know, what it is that I'm doing. I'm advancing the wealth of black people and the power we can have in the entertainment business. I don't care what it looks like to you. And by the way, some of these white people are making me money. So I don't look at every white person as the devil, Malcolm. And they're going, you know, with this conflict, even though it got heated a lot of times, it stayed in house. And you know, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched this, you should have stopped listening a long time ago. But when Malcolm and Muhammad have their friction, because Malcolm's been kind of recruiting Ali to join the Nation of Islam, now when he's won and he's ready to announce it, Malcolm springs on him that he's trying to start his own version of the Muslim faith and wants Muhammad to go along with him because he's a big name and he can attract people to him. That was a lot of friction. He was mad at him. He could have killed him. Probably literally. Right? But when it was time to go out and address the press, he still wanted his brother by his side. And I think as black people, that's what we need to do. We don't need to completely outcast a Terry Crews or, you know, someone who we feel like isn't, quote, black enough because they operate in a different way or they think a different way. This would even hurt me to say. We don't need to outcast a Jason Whitlock, even though I believe he is like, he just pisses me off like no other. But we don't need to outcast this guy, in, you know, because he thinks differently or because he's siding with Trump or because he's, you know, 400 pounds overweight. We don't need to castigate this guy, kick him out of the black community and revoke his black card. What we should do is have, you know, and we have family members that are like that too. We got that cousin or uncle who made some money now and started dressing different and started not wearing socks with his shoes no more. And you know what I mean? He's driving a nice little Benz or something like that. And he, you know, what's up, nephew? When, you know, got a gold tooth in his mouth. Like, we all know that guy. But instead of throwing him out and saying, you know what, forget that guy, you should watch One Night in Miami and get these nigga lessons. All right, that's the end of the podcast. I appreciate you guys watching. I told you we were going to get through this other stuff. Let me tell you what else I had on the list. Married at First Sight, the Seattle Seahawks player who beat his girlfriend to death nearly, the Tiger Woods documentary, Godzilla vs. King Kong, trying to understand why Dionne Warwick is better at Twitter than I am. I don't get it. I had some WoW awards. I had a bunch of things, but we'll get to it next week. I appreciate you guys hanging out with me. Have a good week, good weekend. I'll see you guys next time. Peace.